A Kohen who has any type of physical imperfection is not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. A physical imperfection meaning something as slight as being left-handed. Right? I saw that, Stuart. Something as slight as being left-handed, right? Which we would argue nowadays, what kind of, it's not really a physical imperfection. But physical imperfection here does not mean there's something wrong as much as something different, right? If it's a physical imperfection, something as slight as being left-handed, or according to some, there are all sorts of, if a Kohen Gadol wears glasses, if a Kohen wears glasses, right, I got trouble, guys. Kohen Gadol, if a Kohen wears glasses, he is also not allowed to perform a service in the temple. We're not talking about the Kohen Gadol now. We're not talking about the Kohen Gadol. We're talking about an ordinary Kohen is not allowed in the temple for the service if he is what's called a Baal Mum, if he has some type of physical imperfection. Now, those are the first two rules. Now, what did those Kohanim do? A Kohen who had some type of, a Kohen was disqualified, and there are 140, there's a list of 140 possible imperfections, some of them extremely bizarre, right? A list of 140 imperfections, and any Kohen who entered the Beis HaMikdash, one of the things that the Sanhedrin did, when the Sanhedrin, the high court, was not in session judging cases, one of the things they did is they were examined, they were giving Kohanim physicals, right, to see if they're allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, a Kohen who did not qualify to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, what did he do? So the Mishnah says, the Talmud says, he served in the woodshed. Right? There was a woodshed where they would take the logs from this woodshed and they would bring it to the altar, to burn on the altar. These logs had to be searched, they had to be inspected to make sure there are no worms. Right? Sometimes wood can mold and they would develop worms. So that was the job of the Kohanim. They would serve off campus in the woodshed. They were not on the Temple Mount, they were in the woodshed, and they would inspect these logs to make sure that there are no worms in the logs. That was the job of these Kohanim. Now, the question becomes, first of all, what's with the emphasis on the physical, you know, what's with physical imperfection? We're talking about spirituality, right? Why do you need physical perfection at all, right? So one of the ideas, the most basic idea, is that any time a person comes to the Beis HaMikdash, they're going to be in contact with a Kohen, right? The Torah does not want that the person, right, a guy comes to the altar, to the Beis HaMikdash, he's done an offering. I once thought to myself, what must go on, and what the Kohen could be having a great time, right? Guy comes to the Beis HaMikdash, he's bringing a cow or a sheep, right? And he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Kohen says, yeah, what's up, Mr. Schwartz? He says, well, you know, he looks around, I don't want to hit the light switch again accidentally on Shabbos. He goes, the old light switch thing. The little light switch Schwartz over there. Right? Imagine the Kohanim, they see guys coming up with a cow. You know, there's Cohen, the cheeseburger man, right? Hey, Cohen, how's it going? Hey, you got something in your teeth over there. The Kohanim are having a great, you know, who's coming to the Beis HaMikdash? So imagine the guy's coming up with a cow. Guy comes to the Kohen, to the Beis HaMikdash with a cow. Now, when a person brings a sacrifice, whether it's a sin offering, a guilt offering, a donation for, because he feels great, you did well on a test. You can come to the Beis HaMikdash with a sacrifice, right? You aced your midterm, right? I feel great. I think I'm going to bring a sheep to the Beis HaMikdash, but I'm going to bring a sacrifice, right? You can do that too. Guy comes to the Beis HaMikdash. Every time somebody brought a sacrifice, one of the things that they did was they would do confession, right? Certainly for a sin offering. You put your hands on the animal's head and you confess the sin for which you are bringing this animal, right? Any sacrifice you brought, the idea of the sacrifice is to bring closest to God. So you're supposed to be concentrating on the sacrifice. Now what if the Kohen, who comes to take the sacrifice from you, has some type of physical flaw, which is going to distract you, right? The Kohen's left-handed, right? That's not uniform with what everything else is going on. Or any other flaw will create a distraction, and therefore the Torah doesn't want that. Right? That's the idea of the Kohanim having some type of the physical qualification. Now, go ahead.
Could also the idea of a Kohen having a physical imperfection affect him as well, affect the Kohen himself, affect his maybe creating paranoia that
It could be, but possibly. I didn't see any commentaries say that, right? But it could be, right? But again, somebody being left-handed. Right, if somebody wearing glasses, I don't think it's going to cause too much paranoia. Right, but there is a certain uniform perfection that is wanted. Now the idea is as follows: where does the Kohanim? Let's take there are three basic things the Kohanim cannot be involved with. Right, He's not allowed in contact with dead body, koin godel to an extreme. He's got certain marriage limitations, the koin godel to the extreme, and physical imperfection is not tolerated, right? That's not qualified for the Beis HaMikdash. Now, those are basically the three mitzvahs of the koin godel. Now, where did all of these things come from? Right? That means, let's go back to the Garden of Eden for a second. If that original, and that original creation in the Garden of Eden, if man had not sinned, obviously it was the woman's fault, she gave him the food to eat, right? But if man had not sinned, right, then what would have happened? There would be no death in the world. There would be no illness, right? Physical imperfection being a result of illness. And there would be no problem in the marriage relationship, right? The unions, that means when we go out, when a person is looking to find his spouse, right? Find his zivug, as we call it. Zivug means his pair, his better half, or his other half. Right? Just bear in mind, when you go to look for the other half, you have to find the first half first. Right? That's what people say, when am I going to find my other half, right? Well, find the first half, then you worry about finding the other half, right? But when you're looking for that other half is going to be, you have to merit. We always talk about basher. People, you ever heard the word basher? You know the word basher? What would you translate in English, basher? Predestined. Right? People use the word, confuse the word basher, by the way. Sometimes people use the word basher when it's really irresponsibility. Right? Somebody knocks a glass off the table and says, look, it was basher. That glass wasn't supposed to make it. Right? That's not basher. It's called carelessness. Right? The glass didn't have to go. Right? It means that you're being irresponsible. And people do this all the time. I see it all the time. Where somebody, you know, got into a car accident. It's basher. Right? Well, it could be. Right? On the other hand, if you wouldn't be doing wheelies, things like that wouldn't happen. I thought maybe, you know, it's arguable. Right? I don't know how basher it is. Right? So, that's what people use it for. When you meet your zivug, though, right, when you try to find your soulmate, that soulmate is supposed to be basher. Right? Now, we believe that when we get married, we are marrying the one that is basher. However, it's not necessarily true that you have found the right one at each level. It gets complicated. Each level, there may be more than one for you, right? Theoretically, the person you marry is not the only person you could have married, right? Not a great thing to tell your wife, by the way, right? You never, never, ever say that. You know, well, look, it wouldn't have been you, it would have been somebody else, right? You never say that, right? I haven't, and no one else does. Right, the fruit, I'm here to talk about it, right, which wouldn't be otherwise. You do not say, on the other hand, the possibility exists that you could either miss your basher. The fact that it's predestined doesn't mean you're going to find her, right? There are too many factors involved where using your free will, you may choose to pass up your basher, right? That person may have met her several years ago, but because he was very picky, he skips over her. He decides, you know, I don't want to marry her. Right? I was dead set, I'm marrying a brunette, she's blonde, I don't want to marry a blonde. Well, God may have predestined a blonde for you, right? Or a brunette, as the case may be. Therefore, you may be choosingly, of your own will, you may be passing up your predestined one. Now, what happened in the Garden of Eden? In the Garden of Eden, that was a perfect zivug. Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, they were perfect soulmates. They were created as one unit, right? And then they were meant to find each other. And that was what was supposed to happen. There would have been a perfect system of mating and soul mating, right? That you would have found your perfect soulmate. What happened as a result of the sin? As a result of the sin, you end up with a situation of the possibility of divorce, right? That the union doesn't work out the way it's supposed to, all as a result of Adam Rishon's first sin. Now, you've got the sin as a result of, the sin is the cause of death, the cause of illness, the cause of imperfection in the marriage relationship. What is the koin godel supposed to symbolize in the koinim for that part? The koin godel is supposed to symbolize the perfection that man could possibly be striving for. And that perfection is always what? We always talk about it as being Adam before the sin. That is the ultimate level of perfection. Who's the reminder for what we're supposed to be striving for? The koinim in general, and the koin godel in particular. Therefore, the Torah says that the koinim are not allowed to be involved in these three things, which are the direct result of that original sin, as a way to remind us of what our ultimate destiny is, that we're striving for that perfection. Right? That's the idea. Okay? Any questions, comments, or complaints?
Those are the only three things?
Those are the basic three things. I mean, there are other things that you remember.
What makes those three things basic?
Those are the three things that Kohanim are not allowed to be involved with.
Right, I'm saying what makes those three things, I mean, there are many things, I imagine, that are a result of the original sin. Right, there are many imperfections in the world, besides marriage, besides
death.
And besides
death, illness, and marriage. Death, illness, physical imperfection, and marriage. Right? There are many other things that are problematic in life. Name one.
Well, money.
Money is the result of that original sin. Is the whole man was supposed to have been supported effortlessly. Right? That's all a result. Now, the Kohanim are no different than anybody else when it comes to money.
Why?
Right? They don't have that limitation. You mean, why did it, what should the Kohanim...
What makes those three things?
Well, the truth of the matter is, now that you mention it, the truth of the matter is that people are supposed to support the Kohanim. Now that we mentioned, hey, this is wonderful. Right? The truth of the matter is that you have to give the Kohanim are entitled to 24 gifts. Right? The people have to support the Kohanim. And all, I told you earlier, all the other Kohanim have to make the Kohen Gadol wealthy. Perhaps that's the connection. Right? The connection is that, again, that he should not have to suffer as a result of that sin is a reminder to us of what it is we're ultimately striving for.
So there are four basic things.
Right, and they're all covered. Very good. But there, anything you name will probably fit into those categories. Any type of suffering will probably fit into one of those categories.
What about spiritual separation from God? What assures that the Kohen Gadol has the proper...
Nothing. He's supposed to be striving during the time of the second base of Mikdash. The Kohanim Gadolim were not on a high spiritual level. They were buying the position. That's why they were dying every year. Right? The Kohen Gadol who was not on a high enough spiritual level, the punishment for having entered the Holy of Holies, not on the proper spiritual level, was that he would not live out the year. Right? And therefore, during the course of the Second Temple, they were dying basically one a year.
Last question. So one would expect that there would be similar spiritual qualifications
between whom and whom?
For a Kohen Gadol. Why are there no? I mean, I don't know how they would be determined, but I'm sure that, I mean, you know.
The Kohen Gadol had to be on a certain spiritual level in order to become Kohen Gadol when he was being appointed by the Sanhedrin. That means when the Kohen, I told you earlier, when the Kohen died, if his father died, the only way they would take the son to be the new Kohen Gadol is if he fulfilled the spiritual criteria. Right? At the time when the Jewish people lost control during the time of the Second Temple, when they were under the rulership of other nations, then the appointment became a political appointment. So all you did was you bribed the Greek officials or whoever was in charge at the time, and they would give you the keys to the office. Right? And you became the Kohen Gadol. But it wasn't a great deal because then they died during the course of the year because they weren't on a spiritual level, exactly as you say. Okay.
What was 274?
274 is the technical one, and then the rest of these are all technical until the last one we do today. All of these are fairly technical. And the last one is all the way 291. Anybody who wants to take the mitzvahs, I'll go through them with you later. 291 is the prohibition of castration. Right? You're not allowed to sterilize a man or an animal. Right? Castration is prohibited. Right? The idea being that God created the world perfectly, and somebody involved in this is implying a flaw in creation. Now, he's also preventing the most basic purpose of creation is to keep on creating. Right? God created a world so that man can create. Right? And man creates by bringing the ultimate creation for man is creating other little men. Right? And the ultimate creation is now being prevented by such an act. That's why I told you that circumcision, one of the ideas of circumcision, is by removing the foreskin, what you're actually doing. Why is circumcision such a fundamental mitzvah? Right? Part of the symbolism of circumcision is that you're removing the foreskin and you're uncovering the source of the creative potential. Right? And somebody who keeps the foreskin there, right? That's why the foreskin symbolizes a covering over of that creative potential. And our job is to be as creative in all areas, symbolized by the ultimate act of creation, which is having children. Right? That is the ultimate act of creativity. And that's why circumcision is so essential. That's why something like, what's it called when they tie the two tubes are tied together?
Tube ligation?
No. Vasectomy.
For men.
This vasectomy, right, is the ultimate act of selfishness. So vasectomy means that I want to take pleasure from this world without taking any responsibility, without involving someone in any responsibility. Right? And that's why it would be absolutely prohibited halakhically unless there is some type of medical reason for it. It's got to be a valid medical reason. Then the second would be prohibited. Okay? Question?
Yeah. You said castration is forbidden because it implies that there's a defect in creation. Why is circumcision allowed?
Circumcision is direct command by God telling you to perfect creation. God himself is telling us that we are created with a flaw. Right? If God were to tell us somewhere else we're created with a flaw, then we would accept that too. God says you're created with a flaw. The foreskin is a flaw. It's an imperfection to teach us that we have to go through a certain amount of effort. The same way that we need require physical effort, we need require effort in the physical world to perfect ourselves, we require effort in the spiritual world, spiritually, to perfect ourselves. Okay? Yeah.
Let me just understand. Castration being a prevention of creation of life, would that also involve killing someone being on the same kind of thing? To killing someone being preventing a new creation of life?
Absolutely. Murder is definitely prohibited.
So in that sense, in medical terms, how we found most of our medical, I'm not an environmentalist, I'm going to use this at the point, how we found most of our medical cures to prevent, to keep life, we had to kill animals.
That's okay. Now, if you need to castrate an animal for medical research, right, because you're trying to save life, that would be permissible. Assuming that it's not all theoretical, that you've got a reason to be doing it. But to just castrate an animal because you don't want them impregnating your cows, you have castrated the bull so you shouldn't impregnate the cows. That's what I'm saying, you're not allowed to do that.
Okay. But you're allowed to keep them separate.
Sure.
Isn't that the same as castrating them?
You don't have to, the Torah is not telling you that you have to make procreation possible for the animals at all times.
I can keep a bull that's capable of having a child away from females.
Yes.
All its life.
Yes.
You can do that,
but it's also tzar balei chayim. You're not allowed to cause them pain and distress. Right. If you're doing it for a reason, right, then if you're doing it just because you want to see how angry can I get this bull, right, that's not a great idea, right, and not from practical, not from a halakha point of view, not from practical reason. Okay, and remember, tzar balei chayim is a halakha in the Torah. To cause pain to animals is a halakha in the Torah. Right, if you see a kid throwing a stone at a cat in Israel, you know, every time kids, it's I think an instinctive thing for kids when they see a cat, you have to pick up a stone and throw at it. Right? Kids have to be told. Right? It's not something to get angry at them for, because sometimes they haven't been told. Right? And remember, very often a kid who's throwing stones at a cat, chances are somebody in the house is throwing stones at him. Right? It could be emotional stones, it could be physical stones, but very often kids take out whatever they're getting in the house, they take it out on the animals outside. Right? So if you see cruelty in a child, it also doesn't come overnight. Right? A child who's cruel to flies, right, who loves killing insects, right, just his hobby. Right, he kills insects and he throws rocks at cats and he really, really gets off on it. Right, that's obviously something going on in the house. Right, that's not there's something that he's missing in his life. Right, which he's taking out.
Sometimes when I've read the studies on psychopaths, people born psychopaths, which seems to be the proverbial wisdom, and they're born that way. Often the first sign is they're cruel animals. It seems to be connected to their.
Okay, I don't know about the first assertion, but secondly, certainly I imagine you would see it in their behavior. I don't know about the assertion that they're born that way. You know, the Torah says that the Torah says you have free will. B, they may have certain tendencies and so on and so forth, but you know, we have the
not evil people, but
no, but the way you educate. Somebody came to the Brisker Rav, right? A man came to the Brisker Rav and asked him for a, he wanted a bracha that his son should become a Talmud Chacham. He said his son should be a God-fearing Talmud Chacham. Right? That's what he wanted, a bracha from the Brisker Rav. So Brisker Rav said to him, he'll be as much a Talmud Chacham as you learn Torah with him, and he'll be as God-fearing as your wife cries over her Tehillim. Right? So the family environment certainly is going to affect. I don't know who determined that psychopaths are born that way. You know? But the family certainly has something to do with it.